in people skills programs and nurture capability, and also advise the management of various initiatives. And for me and my family, Maharaj has a special place in our heart. He has inspired and guided us for most of our Krishna conscious life, and he continues to do that. And so now we will hear from Maharaj. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Jai Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Parivrajaka Acharya Ashtotra Sati His Divine Grace Abhay Charana Aravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jaya Shri Shri Radha Gokula Ananda Ki Jaya Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jaya Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jaya Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadramai Ki Jaya Nitai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Hare Krishna. I am very happy to be amongst all of you at the manor this afternoon. And thank you for the invitation, Sachirani Mataji. And it's a pleasure to once again be with all of you. I do hope you're keeping well and are using your time also gainfully in Krishna consciousness. And I hope this retreat that you're having is also going wonderfully like all the other retreats. The topic I chose for today is the Krishna elixir. Now, as you all know, the word elixir means some kind of a medical or a magical potion or a tonic that is meant to give one some sort of miraculous rejuvenation. And this elixir in the material world is not found. Although attempts have been made from time immemorial, but there is no material elixir, truly speaking. So what I will do is, I will discuss a verse from the Mukunda Mala Stotra, a very famous verse, and I would request you all to also, if you have access to a hard copy or a soft copy of the book, Mukunda Mala Stotra, open to text number 37, starting with Idam Shariram. And then we'll talk more about this elixir in the context of the verse. So I hope you've opened up the book. This is a very popular verse, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has also cited it in his works. He has modified the order of the word slightly, but otherwise it's the same verse. So I'll read, and you may all kindly recite after me at your places, wherever you are. Idam shariram parinam peshalam. Patatyavashyam shatasandhi jarjaram. Kemoshadham prachasi moodha durmate. Niramayam Krishna rasayanam piba. Idam shariram parinama peshalam. Patatya vashyam shatasandhi jarjaram. Kimoshadham prachasi moodha durmate. Niramayam Krishna rasayanam piba. Translation. This body's beauty is fleeting, and at last the body must succumb to death after its hundreds of joints have stiffened with old age. So why, bewildered fool, are you asking for medication? Just take the Krishna elixir, the one cure that never fails. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksharon Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. We were speaking about the elixirs of this world, the various miracle tonics, and the Greek history, Roman history, And of course, even Ayurveda and basically the history of all parts of the world is replete with instances of humanity striving to create some kind of a concoction or a decoction that, when drunk or consumed, could give renewed vitality and vigor, that would give youth back again and set back or counteract the debility of old age, something that could miraculously heal the body of all sorts of ailments, something that could give a lot of bliss and joy, something that was extremely delicious like nectar. So it has been the effort of humanity from time immemorial to get something which will give immortality. Amrita. Amrita means death, amrita means not dying, or something that will keep us away from death, immortality. So the struggle for immortality exists because we are essentially immortal as spirit souls. But because we are not aware of our spiritual identity as spirit souls, therefore we seek that longevity on the platform of the material body. And we know for certain that the material body is perishable. But because hope lies eternal in the human breast, so hoping against hope, we want to create something that will extend the lease of life of this body as much as possible and keep it in good shape so that we can enjoy this world more and more. So this has been the effort in all civilizations in the world. Nothing has, of course, succeeded. The demigods have something called a somras, which is extremely delicious, but even that cannot give complete immortality, even though it is called amrita. It can only prolong life, it can only give some kind of a subtle sense gratification, but it cannot give true immortality. True immortality can come only by consuming something which can develop our spiritual potential, because we are essentially spiritual beings. So all efforts to try to find immortality on the material platform will always end in pathetic failure. Of course, for the purposes of maintaining good health, there are bona fide medical systems in the world like Ayurveda, which have spoken about such tonics, which are called rasayana. The word rasa implies something very essential, some essential element of the human body, the dhatus, you know, the different elements that constitute the body. And ayana refers to the journey. So essentially, rasayana refers to something that can keep good health, something that can improve the quality of life, something that can heal ailments and diseases, something that is meant for mental rejuvenation, for increasing memory power, you know, for so many such things. Even for improving complexion, improving energy levels. So Ayurveda has a whole branch of knowledge devoted to rasayana. These rasayanas, of course, as I said, are on the platform of the body. Ayurveda describes about four categories of rasayanas. One are for keeping healthy people healthy and strong, to increase the strength and vigor and bodily immunity of those who are already healthy. Another type of rasayana, or such tonic or elixir, is to heal sick people and increase their immunity. Kamya rasayana, Naimittika rasayana. There are also other rasayanas This is the third category, which is meant for operating at the mental and intellectual level. You know, when there is stress, to reduce the anxiety, to increase memory power, sharpen the intelligence, and such things. So these are actual physical herbal decoctions or concoctions that have to be consumed. But apart from that, Ayurveda says there is also something called achara rasayana, which means that by proper conduct of life, one can actually prevent disease, live a healthy, long, happy life. So there are a series of do's and don'ts. For example, you have to know what kind of food to eat and not eat. There are certain timetables or certain activities to be performed in the day. That's called dinacharya. Then also, according to the seasons, we have to vary our food, our lifestyle, and so on. That's called ritucharya. Then our sleep, our exercise, our conduct, how we deal with people, how we speak, how we control our mind and our anger. Do we give vent to greed? Are we consumed by hatred and negativity for others? So both attitudinal, behavioral and physical traits of character, of conduct, are called achara rasayana. And especially these are conducive to not only good health, but also conducive to spiritual development. So if one follows this kind of a lifestyle, which is essentially a lifestyle in the mode of goodness, it is easier to adopt spiritual practices and sustain them in the long term. When we don't have a corresponding supporting structure of a proper lifestyle and proper habits and proper attitudes and proper behavior, then it is more difficult to perform spiritual practices. And when we actually perform the spiritual practices, then that becomes the actual rasayana, the actual tonic, the actual elixir. On the spiritual platform, there are so many different methods and paths, different types of yoga, different spiritual practices, but amongst them all, the path of devotional to Lord Krishna is by far supreme. It is applicable for any condition of life. Now in this verse, King Kulashekhar, who is a great devotee of the Lord, berates those who take excessive shelter of medicines and doctors and who are excessively concerned about their health. Now, not only is it unwise to be excessively concerned about health, it is also unwise to be excessively unconcerned about health. So, a person in the mode of ignorance is not at all concerned about health. That person may consume all sorts of foodstuffs and intoxicants and be immersed in all sorts of uncleanliness that is absolutely harmful to health. But that person is not in a frame of mind to even understand this. On the other hand, a person in the mode of goodness is very conscious of the need for cleanliness, need for proper lifestyle, etc. But if one takes it too far, then that can also be a big stumbling block. So, in the following of such standards of life, one must try to integrate that with Krishna consciousness. On the material platform, there is no question of happiness, and that is something we've all been hearing about since the beginning of our Krishna consciousness. Because after all, what is this body? There are so many picturesque definitions and descriptions of what the body is all about. And perhaps we won't even have enough time to describe all the different narrations in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the bad bargain that we have got for ourselves by accepting this material body. Now we all know the story of the prince who became infatuated with a young lady, and eventually she was a very saintly lady, and then when he continued to pursue her, then she told him to come after a certain number of days. And in the course of that time, she took a lot of diuretics and all sorts of laxatives and so on and so forth. And she flushed out her body and kept it in a pot. And she looked extremely weak, emaciated, and not at all good looking after that period was over. And when the prince came, he could not even recognize her. And when he asked where that beautiful young lady was, then she said, "Go and look into that pot." Naturally, the prince was quite horrified with what he saw in that pot. And then he realized that this was the same lady, and she was teaching him a very valuable lesson, that this material body cannot be the source of real beauty and real happiness. So King Kulashekhar reinforces this point. Kulashekhar was an exalted devotee, one of the 12 Alvars. Srila Prabhupada began translating and commenting upon this book, Mukundamala Stotra. Somehow or the other, he could not complete the task. And then His Holiness Satswarup Maharaj completed the work, assisted by other devotees, and he wrote the purports as well. So King Kulashekhar, being a pure devotee, understands the value of Krishna consciousness. He also understands the harm, the damage that can be caused when one becomes over preoccupied with the body. You see, it is not possible to not be conscious of the body. You know, all the time we are aware of the body. Now, even as I'm speaking or as you are hearing, the body will give some signals. For example, if you're sitting in a certain posture, it may pain a little bit, so you may adjust and sit up and shift your posture, because your body forces you to become conscious of it, to become aware of it. So that is something that is natural. Even about the weather, for example, we are always conscious of the weather. Every time it's a little pleasant, we make good exclamations. And in England especially, all the time you're only talking of the weather. You know, how sunny it is, how rainy it is, how cold it is. So that's because it affects the body. When there's hunger, when there's thirst, when there's some illness, when we feel good, when we feel bad. So the body, the mind, they have this way of constantly imposing themselves upon us, thrusting themselves into our consciousness and forcefully making us aware of them. So it is not easy to come out of bodily consciousness. It is not that pure devotees of the Lord do not feel pain. They also feel pain, because so long as the soul is in the material body, the connection is there. However, they just learn to tolerate it. And they learn to absorb themselves so perfectly in Krishna consciousness that they are able to transcend the disturbance that is caused by that pain of the body. So ultimately, one has to realize how futile the preoccupation with this material body is. So King Kulashekhar here, in order to reinforce this conviction, is speaking these words. Inasmuch as it is important for us to know that we are the spirit soul, it is equally important for us to know that we are not the material body. So inasmuch as we need to know what the qualities and the characteristics of the soul are, it is also helpful for us to know, to some degree, not in so much detail, we don't all have to become doctors, but at least in some detail we should understand philosophically what the situation of the body is. So King Kulashekhar says, "Idam shariram," this body, "parinama peshalam," its beauty is fleeting. And that I just illustrated with the example of that beautiful lady and the prince. So, how long will this beauty last? It will last only for a few years. And even though we are very eager to maintain the looks of the body, the beauty of the body as long as we possibly can, even in old age, because we want to look very beautiful for everybody else, but the point is that it's a futile task. It is not going to happen. Eventually, the symptoms of decay, of degeneration, of old age will all show up. The hair will start graying, the wrinkles will start showing, and the joints will start stiffening, and everything else will start coming in that tells us that we are not, going to get happiness through this body. Idam shariram parinama peshalam patatyavashyam. Patati means the destruction or the downfall of this body. Avashyam is certain, which means that at some point in time, destruction of this body is inevitable. It is unavoidable. It will happen. Shat sandhi jarjaram. Shat means hundreds. Sandhi means joints. And jarjaram means stiffening. So, this body is full of hundreds of joints that stiffen with old age. So those who are very young, perhaps don't have any experience of how painful it is or difficult it is when joints get stiffened. But as one grows older, and especially if one hasn't done some yogic exercises or kept oneself physically fit, then one sees it is so difficult to even sit down in the temple hall or sit down for a class, and then one has to take support of so many other things, other types of furniture and so on. So with age, somehow the joints start stiffening, then there is arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis, and so many things start happening to the material body. The material body is a bad bargain. It's not a good deal at all. Idam shariram parinama peshalam patatyavashyam shatasandhi jarjaram. So now that this is the condition of the body, Kulashekar says, kim aushadham prichasi mudadurmate. Now, saintly people sometimes speak a little harshly. And the harsh words of the saintly people, the great devotees of Krishna, is not to be considered on the same platform as the harsh words of people in the mode of passion and ignorance. Because those in the modes of passion and ignorance speak harsh words being induced by or driven by envy, greed, hatred, and so on. So those words or that harshness or that harsh behavior is prompted by negativity in the heart. Whereas the harsh words spoken by a pure devotee, not that a pure devotee always speaks harsh words, a pure devotee is generally very gentle and very kind, etc. But the harsh words are sometimes spoken, rarely. But when they are spoken, they are spoken in a mood of compassion, of kindness, of love, in a mood of waking up someone who is asleep. Sometimes it is necessary to be a little harsh in an emergency condition to save somebody. Srila Prabhupada used to give the example that sometimes when somebody is sleeping in a burning house, then you have to go and wake up the person with harsh language, with loud sounds. You cannot then be very conscious of whether the person will be hurt, emotionally by you speaking loudly and so on, because it's a question of saving that person's life. So therefore, the person who is a well-wisher does not mind speaking harshly and shouting loudly somehow or the other to wake up that person so he or she can be saved. So the pure devotees of the Lord are Suhridam Sarvadehinam. They're always the real well-wishers of all living entities. They want to see everyone happy and free from all misery. And they also understand that Krishna consciousness is the only way that people can be free forever from misery. Pure devotees understand well that solutions for alleviation from misery that are created from material elements within this material world are only temporary in nature. And while sometimes we may indeed use them, but we must not place too much faith in them, and we must not be too much preoccupied with them. So in order that we do not succumb to a natural temptation to be overly preoccupied with the ill health of the body or in keeping up the good looks and the good health of the body, King Kulashekhar addresses the person, especially one who is getting older in age and who thinks that taking medicine is the only solution. In Krishna consciousness, one is not against medicines. And certainly Ayurvedic medicines, if they are prescribed by a qualified physician in times of need, or even as rejuvenation, methods of rejuvenation, etc., are okay, they are fine if you take them in the right way, in the right spirit, don't excessively use them. And sometimes allopathic medicines are also required, what to do in very acute conditions, perhaps these things happen. So whether it's this pathy or that pathy, the important point is that as per need, we may sometimes take medicines. Because our purpose in taking medicines is to keep the body healthy enough, strong enough, fit enough to be able to serve Krishna nicely, properly. Those who are not devotees also want to keep their body healthy and strong, but the purpose they have in mind is that they want to enjoy sense gratification as much as possible, for which a healthy body and healthy senses are required. But that is not our motivation. So if we have this in the proper context, if we keep things in the right proportion, if we have the right understanding about when and how much and how often to use medicines and what kind of medicines to use, if we have that wisdom, then there is no problem in using medicines. But King Kulashekhar addresses as Durmati, as one of low intelligence, or you know, one who is really, how does he translate it here? Durmate is one whose intelligence is spoilt. Duh means bad, mati means intelligence. So, one who is a bewildered fool, why are you asking for medications? Kim, why? Aushadham means medicine. Prichasi, asking. Murha refers to a fool again. So King Kulashekhar uses two very strong words here, mood and durmati. Mood means an impudent fool, and durmati one who has spoilt his intelligence. So why do you ask for medicines, O impudent fool, O one who has lost his intelligence? So he's referring to one who is just absorbed in medicines and medicines and medicines. You know, some years ago when I was in London, I had gone to for a doctor's appointment, and Sundarananda Prabhu had arranged some appointment with a specialist. So I was sitting in the waiting room there, and there was this Time magazine. I don't remember the exact title, but the main cover story of the magazine, of that issue, was that there was a whole science developing which wanted to consider death as a disease. And just as any disease can be counteracted by proper medicines, and just as every disease has its roots in something in the cells of the body, and if one does something, some repair work with the cells and the tissues and the organs and so on, then the disease can be rectified. So similarly, death is also the failure of certain types of tissues and organs and cells and so on. And so we can rectify that with medicines. That is the whole approach that this interdisciplinary field is taking, according to that cover story in Time magazine. So with interest, I quickly glanced through that article, and it indicated that there were many people of different disciplines. There were biologists, there were computer science specialists, there were psychologists, and there were a variety of doctors of different specialities, and a whole host of other people involved working together to try to find the solution to death, and to somehow or the other to try to postpone it. And one of the key persons in this effort, I forget his name, I just had quickly read it, I read his short interview. And in that interview, he said that he was in his 60s, but his body was fit enough for a person in the 40s. So his body was actually 20 years younger than his biological age. And the reason for that, he said, is that he would take more than 200 different tablets and capsules and medicines every single day. And as far as he was concerned, he was approaching the whole thing very systematically, very scientifically, looking at every part of the body, the different cells that could decay, degenerate, etc. And to counteract that decay and degeneration, he had all these supplements and all sorts of other things, prophylactics and so on. So he said, just as I have been able to gain 20 years of youth, gradually in course of time, just by taking these different supplements, we will be able to live longer and longer, and eventually we will come to a point when we can live forever in this body. That was the whole purpose of this whole effort. In fact, it was so I don't know what kind of words to use for that, because in one sense it was a laughable endeavor, but it also evoked some kind of compassion at the foolishness of it all, you know, and about how much valuable time and energy of human life is being wasted on something that is absolutely so useless, that will never be successful ever. This effort to make this material body immortal has been going on from time immemorial. It's nothing new. So therefore the idea that somehow or the other I will just keep prolonging this whole thing with taking medicines, more and more medicines, is just very sad. Just a waste of time. If one has a genuine medical problem and one is required to take a few medicines every day, fine, that's all right. But a devotee's mindset, as I mentioned earlier, is that we need the body healthy in order to serve Krishna better. For that purpose, a devotee may undergo sometimes some surgeries and some chemotherapies and radiotherapies and, you know, so many other things like that. We may have to do it. So we do it for this reason. But for those who, like this gentleman, take 200 plus tablets and capsules and so on every single day, in fact, that's more than the food he eats probably. So every time he says, when he sits to eat, he has a bowl full of all these different types of capsules or tablets, and then he has to take them several times a day. not just at meal times, even at other times. So one has to be completely obsessed with the body. One has to be always thinking about when to take the next medicine, the next set of capsules and tablets. So this is the kind of people that King Kulashekar is addressing here. Kim Oshadham Prichasi Muda Durmate. Even in Shankaracharya's, Adi Shankaracharya's compositions, Bhaja Govindam, he starts off by saying, Bhaja Govindam, Govindam Bhaja Mudamate, Samprapte Sannihite Kale, Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dukran Karane. He says, O dear fool, why do you waste your time studying at this old age all these rules of Sanskrit grammar and everything? This is the time to worship Govinda. Bhaja Govindam, bhaja means to worship. Bhaja Govindam, bhaja Govindam, Govindam, bhaja, Mudhamate. So again, Shankaracharya, who is actually a hidden devotee, speaks somewhat harshly like this. Mood means impudent fool. Mudhamati, one whose intelligence is spoiled. Samprapte sannihite kale, at the time of death, all these rules of grammar are not going to save you. Therefore, you worship and serve Govinda, Krishna. There is a story that when Adi Shankaracharya was once in Varanasi and he passed by, he saw an elderly Brahmana, really elderly man. And he was sitting there trying to memorize the rules of grammar. You know, for those of you who are familiar with Sanskrit grammar, there are so many rules to be memorized. Thousands of little rules by Panini and others. So you have to memorize those sutras, you know, short, pithy grammatical rules. So this elderly person, instead of spending his last few days on this in this body, trying to serve Krishna, chant Krishna's name and, you know, remember Krishna, he was wasting his time trying to learn the rules of grammar. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't learn Sanskrit or shouldn't learn any language or grammar. But the point is that generally this is done in childhood or in youth, and even later in age, if one wants to learn Sanskrit language because one wants to appreciate and relish the language of the scriptures and understand the shlokas better, that's fine. But we are doing it with a devotional intent ultimately. But this person, this old Brahmana, was not. That is why Shankaracharya admonished him, and that is how these Bhaja Govindam verses burst forth from his mouth. So in any case, Kulashekar here also is saying the same thing. Kim Oshadham Prichasi Muda Durmate. Why are you taking all the medicines of this world? Then what should you do instead? Niramayam Krishna Rasayanam Piba. Piba means drink. Drink what? Krishna Rasayanam. Rasayanam means elixir, the tonic. And what happens with this tonic when you drink it? Niramayam. It serves as a prophylactic, which means it serves to prevent any ailment. That's what a prophylactic means in medical science. That's some measure or some medicine to prevent a particular ailment from happening. That's called a prophylactic. So take the ultimate prophylactic, which is Krishna Rasayanam, the nectar, the elixir, the spiritual tonic of Krishna, Krishna's names, descriptions of Krishna's forms and pastimes and his abode, the glorification of his devotees and so on. So all of this constitutes Krishna Rasayanam. So King Kulashekar says, Piba, drink that, and that will be the real solution to all problems. In the 10th canto, the beginning of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam also, we find this beautiful verse, Nivritta Tarshay Rupakiyamanat भवौषधा श्रोत्र मनोभिरामात् क उत्तम श्लोक गुणानुवादात् पुमान विरज्येत बिना पशुघ्नात्। Here it is said, Parikshit says, Nivritta Tarsher Upagiya Manat. For one who is done with trying to exploit the resources of this world, one who is satiated, Nivritta Tarsher Upagiya Manat, one who sings or recites the nectar of Krishna Katha, Bhava Aushadat Shrotra Manah Abhiramat. So when the glorification of Krishna, especially as done in the Parampara system, the system of disciplic succession is done, then what happens? Shrotra, that is for the ears, and Manah, that is for the mind, Abhiramat, it's very pleasing. So this is the first symptom or the first characteristic of hearing and reciting the glorification of Krishna. It is very pleasing to the heart and to the ears. And what is the effect? It serves as an aushadha. We've already seen this word aushadha here, used by King Kulashekhara, meaning medicine. So this is also aushadham. But it is the aushadham for what kind of a disease? Bhava. So in Sanskrit, the word roga means a disease. So the deadliest of all rogas is not, you know, coronavirus, although it's dangerous enough, not cancer, that's also dangerous enough, not HIV, AIDS, or cholera, or typhoid, or whatever else. Why not? Because even if one has these dangerous ailments, and even in the worst case scenario, one succumbs to such an ailment and dies, one loses only one body. That particular body is lost. Then one gets another body, and life continues. So, these kind of medicines, or these kind of diseases, I beg your pardon, will only destroy one body. Then in the next life, we get another body, we have other diseases that will destroy that body. So these diseases will come and go, and they have the potential to destroy just one body at a time. But this bhavaroga is so deadly that it can destroy millions of bodies. The word bhava means to become. So, to become old, to become diseased, to become born again. So bhava indicates the cycle of birth and death, where one grows old, one dies, one takes birth again, goes through the whole system again, becomes old, dies, and this cycle of birth and death goes on and on. So this repetitive cycle of birth and death, called the samsara chakra, the wheel of samsara, that is bhavaroga. That is the disease that keeps us bound to this cycle of birth and death. And this roga or this disease is more dangerous because it keeps us bound again and again to suffering. For as long as we continue revolving in the cycle of birth and death, we will have to suffer the pangs of material existence. Whereas, if one takes this bhava aushadha, this nectar of glorification of Krishna, then one can actually make a permanent cure for suffering, because one will then not need to have any material body again, ever. There will be no need for a material body. Then one will go back to the spiritual world and get a spiritual body. So then it is said, Parikshit Maharaj says then, ka uttama shloka gunanuvadat. So who will then virajyeta, that means not who will give up. So who will give up or not accept such a simple, sublime, efficacious medical treatment like hearing and chanting about Krishna and the glorification of Krishna? Uttama Shlok is the name of Krishna. Puman virajyeta vina pashugnat. Except for one who is a pashugna. Pashu means an animal. Gna means one who kills. So this has two meanings. One is a literal meaning, which means a butcher or anyone who kills an animal or who causes an animal to be killed or who participates in some way in the killing of an animal. And as the Manusmriti says, therefore, the person who kills the animal, the person who transports the animal, who cooks the animal, who serves the animal, who eats, all are implicated. So that is the literal meaning of the word pashugna. So for one who is into meat eating, who kills animals, whose hands are tainted, so to speak, with the blood of innocent and helpless creatures, then it is not possible for taste for Krishna consciousness to arise in the heart. The second meaning of pashugna is one who commits spiritual suicide. One who is not interested in spiritual matters. That's also called an atmaha. So in any case, King Parikshit Maharaj is quite astounded that there are also people in this world who will not take this beautiful medicine of Krishna consciousness to solve their problems once and for all. King Kulashekhar, in the next verse, which I discussed a few days ago in another forum, also says, "Ashyaryam etaddhi manushya loke sudham parityajya visham pibanti." He said, in this world of human beings, the greatest surprise is that people give up this nectar, sudham parityajya. Sudham means nectar, parityajya means to give up. Visham pibanti, and they drink the poison. So the nectar that Kulashekhar Maharaj is referring to are the names of Lord Krishna. And the poison that King Kulashekhar is referring to are all the worldly talks that go on, worldly gossip, all sorts of materialistic discussions and so on. So Parikshit Maharaj's is formula of Nivritta Tarshair Vagiyamana Bhavaushra Shrotra Manobhiramat is the perfect one. It is extremely pleasing. So one can take refuge of the process of Krishna consciousness and experience this happiness for the body, for the mind, and ultimately, of course, for the soul. So this is called Rasayana, the tonic. The tonic of Krishna consciousness, the ultimate tonic for the soul. We are doing so many things for taking care of the body, for nourishing the body. But what is the human society doing for nourishing the soul? The soul also has its needs. Srila Prabhupada used to often give the example of the parrot who is caged in a golden cage. And there is a lady who looks after the cage diligently, but she does not feed the parrot. So the parrot dies. So what use is it of polishing the cage? Similarly, this body is like the cage. We are polishing this cage, nurturing it, nourishing it, taking care of it, pampering it, but neglecting the needs of the soul inside. So we die a spiritual death, so to speak. And we are forced to drink the medicine, the difficult poison, the bitter poison of bhava-roga. But instead, if we take shelter in Krishna consciousness in due earnest, then we will be able to gradually relish the nectar of bhava-aushadha, of this Krishna-rasayanam. And I'll conclude with a short description of something called Bhakti Rasayana, the tonic of devotion to the Supreme Lord. You've all heard of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the magnum opus of Srila Sanatan Goswami. The Brihat Bhagavatamrita is spoken when Mother Uttara, the mother of King Parikshit, approaches Parikshit after Shukadev Goswami has spoken the Srimad Bhagavatam to him for 7 days and then left. And Parikshit Maharaj is awaiting his death any moment. And Uttara rushes to him and wishes to know from him what it is that Shukadev Goswami has told him. And Parikshit Maharaj then speaks the first canto, or the first part of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is the narration of Narad Muni's quest for the greatest devotee. And that eventually culminates in the ascertainment of the gopis of Vrindavan as being the topmost devotees. And then at the beginning of the second part, Uttara wants to know from Parikshit some more about Goloka Vrindavan, because she doesn't think that the Brajabasis would go to the same spiritual destination as the other great devotees, that they would need a special destination, which is Goloka, which is Vrindavan, distinct from the other Vaikuntha planets. And then Parikshit Maharaj describes the adventures of this young cowherd boy called Gopa Kumar. And it includes very nectarian descriptions of Goloka, among other things. Now this whole thing is being narrated by the Rishi Jaimini to the son of King Parikshit, Janmejaya, after King Parikshit's departure. Like most scriptures happen, somebody who was present there, he goes and narrates what happened. So Janmejaya now, after hearing the whole Brihat Bhagavatamrita, feels great pain at the prospect of not being able to hear this katha, this narration more, because he knows the narration is coming to an end. So he feels very sorry for that. So he says that, can you please give me some potent nectar which will purify me completely? And then sage Rishi Jaimini, he says, all right, I will tell you some verses that your father King Parikshit recited from two great scriptures, and I also recite this again and again, feeling separation from your father. And one who recites these verses will then achieve great happiness in Krishna consciousness. So then he recites 63 verses, one after the other. There are 4 verses from the Brahma Samhita and 59 verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, most of them from the 10th canto. So these are very nice verses, beautiful verses, arranged in a certain sequence by Sanatan Goswami. And it will be nice for us to also relish some of these verses. So I think we are, do we have time to just chant 2 or 3 of these verses, just to recite them? So I can tell you the verse numbers and you can look up the verses and we can recite them. So do we have time to do that? Okay, so I will suggest we can do 2 verses just to save time. So take up the 10th canto, 15th chapter, text number 8. Starting with Dhanyeyam. Okay, I hope you've all got it. And you can chant after me. these verses are all from the Vrindavan Leela, most of them, and they're very nourishing. So apart from our regular chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, it might be a good idea for us to sometimes recite these verses from the Bhagavatam, Brahma Samhita, and they will act as rasayanam for our aggrieved hearts, which are pained with all the struggles of a day-to-day life in material existence. So, all right, text 8 of chapter 15, canto 10.
Dhanyeyam adya dharani trinavirudhastvat. Padas prishodrumulata karajabhimrishtaha. Nadyodraya khagamriga sadayavalokaihi. Gopyontarena bhujayorapiyat sprihashrihi.
Translation. This earth has now become most fortunate because you have touched her grass and bushes with your feet and her trees and creepers with your fingernails, and because you have graced her rivers, mountains, birds and animals with your merciful glances. But above all, you have embraced the young cowherd woman between your two arms, a favor hankered after by the goddess of fortune herself. Another verse in the same volume, but in chapter 21. Text 10. 10, 21, 10.
Vrindavanam sakhibhuvo vitanoti kirtim. Yad devaki sutapudam bhuja labdha lakshmi. Govinda venu manu matta mayura nrityam. Prekshyadri sanvavaratanya samasta sattvam.
O friend, Vrindavan is spreading the glory of the earth, having obtained the treasure of the lotus feet of Krishna, the son of Devaki. The peacocks dance madly when they hear Govinda's flute, and when other creatures see them from the hilltops, they all become stunned. And one last verse from the 12th chapter of the 10th canto. 10, 12, 6, text number 6. 10, 12, 6. I'll read the translation first. Sometimes Krishna would go to a somewhat distant place to see the beauty of the forest. Then all the other boys would run to accompany him, each one saying, "I shall be the first to run and touch Krishna. I shall touch Krishna first." In this way they enjoyed life by repeatedly touching Krishna.
Yadi duram gatah Krishna.
Yadi duram gatah Krishna.
Vanashobhekshanayatam.
Vanashobhekshanayatam.
Aham purvam, aham purvam.
Aham purvam.
इति संस्पृश्य रे मिरे So there are totally 63 verses in this Bhakti Rasayana, which are considered by Sanatana Goswami to be Bhakti Rasayana, very nourishing for our Bhakti Kripa. Of course, every verse from the Bhagavatam, from the Brahma Samhita, and the devotion literature is like that. But particularly if one wants to take the indication of Sanatana Goswami, then we can try to chant some of these verses. I only chanted 3 of them today. It's a good hobby to have if you want to just recite these verses every day, maybe for 5 minutes or 10 minutes as a practice. And then some of you who have a taste for memorizing these verses, you can also memorize them. So we'll stop here, and if there are any questions, then you can ask. How do we go about the questions? Do we have time for questions?
Yes, Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much. Yes, I think the questions have been sent over to you already.
Oh, they have the 100 and how many? So many chats.
We've had a few questions. Madan Prabhu has sent them over to me.
Has he? By email or by what? By what way? Okay, yes, there are many questions that have come privately to me. But there are so many. Okay. Okay, let's start by one. Oh, so you've also kind of given the main points of someone's been almost transcribing it. Yeah? So that's interesting. Okay, so the first question that I can see here. Okay, is it important to be constantly conscious of the temporality of the body to progress in chanting and Krishna consciousness? Is there a practical meditation for this? Well, you see, if you're constantly conscious of the temporality of the body, then you become conscious of the body even more. The point is that, you know, our noble aim is to become so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that we somehow get our attention drawn away from the material body. And naturally, we can't be artificial about it. We can't try to do that in a way that will be harmful. But the real key is to absorb in Krishna consciousness so that our absorption in the body will diminish. Okay. What is the next question? When do we know that we are creating an imbalance between our material and spiritual selves? And how do we overcome that? Well, any imbalance will immediately give a signal. You know, all the traditional systems of medicine or holistic systems of care, they speak about the sense of balance that is required for maintaining happiness. For example, in Ayurveda, they speak of kapha, vata and pitta. They must be balanced in order to have a healthy body. Similarly, in yoga, they speak about all the pranas being balanced. So similarly, when the material and spiritual side of life is not balanced, then there will be an imbalance. That imbalance will get reflected in either our spiritual life or the material life, and ultimately it will all be reflected in our spiritual life. So if you perform too much of austerity and fall too sick, if you neglect the body too much, even for your spiritual pursuit, that could have consequences which might be a setback for your devotional practices. So the balance would be affected. On the other hand, if one leans too much towards the body, one could suffer in terms of not being able to do adequate spiritual practice. So that will also have its consequences. Ultimately, this balance will tell in our spiritual life. Okay, next question. You mentioned Ayurvedic means of keeping the body strong and healthy is fine in Krishna consciousness. Can you please share how and when to use Ayurveda and when to use allopathy and other medicines? I am not a doctor, neither an allopathic doctor nor an Ayurvedic doctor, but as a layman who is definitely interested in Ayurveda and who has some very, very rudimentary understanding of Ayurveda, I can say that at the very least, what we can do is to utilize the benefits of Ayurveda for preventive health care. Ayurveda is excellent even for therapeutic care, but especially for preventive health care, and especially in these times of the coronavirus pandemic and so on, we can take refuge in such traditional systems of medicine which are bona fide, which are authorized, which are shastric, and provided it is done under authorized direction. Don't go to any quack or something. But the preventive health care, I mentioned the dinacharya, ritucharya, the daily practices we have to follow, the seasonal practices we have to follow, the health tips in relation to food, you know, all of these things we can try to follow. It will be of great help to us. And therapeutically, if something is available, that's fine. When it comes to very acute cases, perhaps allopathy has its benefits, especially emergency cases and so on. But I'm sure Ayurveda also has some things there. But so at least for our daily use, we can do that. Next question. We say that we are not the body, but in practice, this is challenging. Could you give us a few practical tips on how to begin this? Well, it begins by really doing more of Krishna consciousness. And when it comes to the body, somehow to try to see that we don't get too carried away by their demands. You know, the food, we are hungry and we really want to eat, you know, so we just balance yukta hara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta svapna vabodasya yoga bhavati dukkha. Regulation in our matters of food, sleep, recreation, etc. will be very important. Next question, is it okay to take modern medicine? Oh, where is... which is tried and tested through animals. Is this okay for Krishna consciousness? That's a difficult one. That is why I'm emphasizing on prevention. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as the proverb goes. And Ayurveda is especially helpful for preventive health care. Even whatever you can glean from modern medicine, if it's not opposed to our principles, And if that helps in preventive health care, no harm in taking that as well. So I think if we emphasize on preventive health care, it will substantially reduce the need for us to take all these other medicines that may have been created partly by testing on animals. There are many medicines perhaps which may not have been tested in animals, I don't know. But there's definitely something that is a problematic area. But there is a large variety. I think some doctor or someone, would a pharmacologist or somebody who is in the field will be able to tell us more. But even in allopathy, if we can look for medicines that are not tried and tested, that don't contain any non-vegetarian products, those things would be especially helpful. Okay, next question is, we see so many health regimes going on. Pilates, gymming, is it okay to participate in such quote-unquote healthy activities in Krishna consciousness? Well, pilates and gymming and all that is okay, provided you're not doing it just to build a body for showing off to everybody, to build a muscular body and a lean, mean, fighting machine kind of a body, just to show off to, you know, the world. But if you're doing it just for good health, you know, that is best. You know, exercise, the best exercise is sattvic, which means like yoga and walking and such things. Prabhupada spoke about swimming as well. And of course, Srila Prabhupada emphasized dancing in the kirtan as the transcendental exercise for everybody. And if somebody wants to take on more rigorous exercises, which are a little bit in the mode of passion, maybe some a lot in the mode of passion, then you have to do it with caution. I'm not saying we shouldn't do that, but do it with caution, don't overdo it, don't get too much in the mode of passion with your exercises, utilize a little bit and spend more time with Krishna consciousness. It is sometimes quite difficult to tell non-devotees that spending a lot of time in preserving the beauty of the physical body is not good for spiritual development. How can we encourage them to do otherwise? Maybe you can ask them to hear this lecture and also to read this verse of King Kulashekar, which we just discussed today. Idam shariram parinama peshalam. That might help. Okay, death is one of the phobias most of us have. How can we have a constructive and spiritual view of death that can help us reduce our fear of death and prepare for it in the right way? Well, for a devotee of the Lord, Krishna consciousness is the right thing to do, right? By that, automatically the fear of death gets taken away. Ichchatam akuto bhayam. So for whatever desires we may have, we should harer nama anukirtanam. We should just be chanting the holy names of the Lord. So therefore, just completely immersing ourselves in Krishna consciousness to the extent possible is the one that can automatically give us fear. And the confidence and faith that a devotee is headed back for the spiritual world. And even if a devotee has not been able to complete Krishna consciousness in this life, he or she is at least assured of a very, very good birth in the next life in a devotee family where Krishna consciousness can be continued. Okay. So I think one last question and then we'll... Okay. The question is, would you please give us the list of all the 63 verses? Well, it's not possible to do it now. It'll take a long time. 63 verses, just to read them out will take a while. But I'm sure you can find it on the internet these days. It'll be available. You can see that. Okay? Okay, one last question. if we have some disease whereby we have to take lots of medication or go through lots of treatment to continue living, by doing this we are still suffering physically, mentally, emotionally, at what point should you think I should stop all this and wait for me to finish my life? That's a very serious question. It's not something I can answer easily right now, but the point is that there is no objection at all to take serious efforts to protect one's life when there is a dangerous disease. And we can take efforts that are reasonable, even if that means we have to go for chemotherapy, radiotherapy, or whatever other types of, you know, sometimes there are surgeries that you may have to go. If that is really what is required to save the life and help us to continue in our Krishna consciousness, well, so be it. Undoubtedly, these methods will also give rise to their own problems and side effects. And the disease fundamentally also has its own emotional problems. So the important thing is that whilst going through all this, we have to try to remain very Krishna conscious as much as we can. And the devotees around us can help us to maintain this Krishna consciousness. because it is not an easy task in the midst of physical and mental pain to focus on Krishna. So we need the help of devotees. At all levels, physical, spiritual, emotional, medical. And then, with the boost that we get by the support that we receive, we should try to chant, we should try to read or hear, if reading is possible, to whatever degree our body and mind permit us in that state of health. But we should always be positive. I remember Shruti Dharma Prabhu saying in the last class he gave at the Bhaktivedanta Manor, that when he went to the doctor and he was asked in the clinic about his blood group, he said, be positive. Now, I don't know whether his blood group was actually B positive. Among the eight groups, I don't know what his blood group was. But what he intended to say was that his formula in life was to be positive. In life, one should be positive. And he lived that, Shruti Dharma Prabhu, all through till the very end. So he taught us this very valuable lesson of how to go through this. So your question is best answered, through the example of Shruti Dharma Prabhu and many other wonderful devotees who have departed from this world in the recent past and also earlier. Okay, so I think we'll end here. It's been quite a while, almost an hour and a half, I think. Okay.
Thank you so much, Maharaj,
okay,
for giving your precious time, to giving us this thought-provoking class. And I know you've been giving classes back to back, so we're so grateful that you've given us some of your time. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol, Hare Krishna, Bhaktivedanta Manor ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Gokulanand ki jai, all the volunteers ki jai, Hare Krishna, thank you.